United States of America, known as Land of the Free, Home of the Brave. America has come to symbolize freedom throughout the world. People from all nations and from all walks of life have called America their home. America has welcomed them with open arms. Indeed, the famed Statue of Liberty is the embodiment of the fulfillment of this dream. In New York's public education system alone, its student body represents 145 countries of the world. By welcoming all the world's people and affording them unprecedented opportunities, America has embraced the most talented minds in all fields and from all countries. In becoming a true melting pot with few barriers to success, this young nation has become a model for others to follow. The United States has dozens of major cities playing an important role in U.S. culture, heritage, and economy. In 2004, 251 incorporated places had populations of at least 100,000, and 9 had populations greater than 1 million, including 5 important global cities: New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, and Philadelphia. In addition, there are 50 metropolitan areas with populations over 1 million, including Long Beach, Dallas, Boston, Phoenix, Seattle, and San Diego. With no official language, English is the de facto language of the United States. About 82% of the population speaks only English at home. Although not all Americans speak English, it is the most common language for daily interaction among both native and non-native speakers. Opportunities in this country are only limited by our imagination and our ability. Indeed, 2 of the richest men in the world, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, hail from America, and both started their companies from the ground up. But despite its success as one of the world's superpowers, the United States is also a very spiritual country, allowing freedom of worship to its citizens. Indeed, religion has traditionally played a large role in American society. Many of the original European colonists came to America for religious reasons. Religion still has a major influence on American politics and culture. As a liberal country that respects its citizens' right to worship, America has a deep affinity with Supreme Master Ching Hai. She first visited America in the late 1980s in response to the earnest and sincere invitation of spiritual aspirants. Since then, Supreme Master Ching Hai has accepted many invitations from around the country to share her wisdom and knowledge on spirituality. Over the years, with her boundless love and compassion, Supreme Master Ching Hai has also provided humanitarian assistance to many parts of the country. For example, in 1993, many parts of the Midwestern United States were flooded as a result of heavy rainfall. Supreme Master Ching Hai's heart went out to these victims, and thus, she immediately sent relief teams to this region to provide financial and material assistance. In 1994, in recognition of her compassion and contributions to these states, the governors of 6 Midwestern states, Illinois, Minnesota, Missouri, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Kansas, presented Supreme Master Ching Hai with the World Spiritual Leadership Award, and also proclaimed February 22nd as Supreme Master Ching Hai Day. And in the face of the worst human tragedy to ever occur on U.S. soil, on September 11, 2001, Supreme Master Ching Hai had also responded by immediately sending relief teams from around the country and all over the world to Ground Zero in New York City. Supreme Master Ching Hai's financial contributions amounted to over $300,000 US dollars to organizations aiding the victims. contributions were given to the Virginia chapter of the American Red Cross, National Red Cross in Washington, D.C., National Salvation Army, Crisis Link, an organization to help the families of the Pentagon victims, and the Virginia Hospital Center, where many of the injured victims from the Pentagon were treated. In New York, Supreme Master Ching Hai's contributions were directed to the Salvation Army, the American Red Cross, and the Firefighters Memorial Fund. Additional contributions from Supreme Master Ching Hai were allocated for relief supplies. Our association members on site at Ground Zero provided supplies, medicine, and daily nourishment of delicious vegetarian food and hot coffee to relief workers. For rescuers who were in areas too dangerous to leave, the Ching Hai Mobile Meal Truck, the only mobile food unit at the time, delivered food directly to those workers. As an embodiment of true love, Supreme Master Ching Hai continues to this day to extend her loving compassion to all parts of the United States, from Virginia, Ohio, Kentucky, Alabama, to California, Florida, Texas, Hawaii, and other states, from the elderly to the homeless, the orphaned and the impoverished, and victims of natural disasters. All are recipients of Supreme Master Ching Hai's love. Everywhere she goes, Supreme Master Ching Hai leaves an indelible impression on the hearts of all those who met her or received her unconditional assistance. For many, Supreme Master Ching Hai's words of wisdom act like a loving balm that soothes their aching soul as they yearn to return to God's embrace.
We now invite you to listen to the following lecture given by Supreme Master Ching Hai in San Francisco, California, USA, on November 27, 1993, entitled, Have No Illusion About Enlightenment.
Masters of the past, present, or future are those scientists who know many things from the universe that we ordinary person probably find it difficult to understand or to believe. But then they will also teach us or guide us into this science so that later we ourselves also become a master or a teacher, at least to ourselves. Because to be master of ourselves is the most difficult. And to be able to do that, we must have the strongest power, which is the power of God, the universal intelligence, which we have all along. Some people accuse Jesus when he was alive for telling a lie, for being blasphemy, because he said he is one with God. He is the Son of God. He is and the Father one. But we have forgotten, and even nowadays people still think that way. We have forgotten that except God, there's nothing else who lives within this temple. The I that we assume ourselves to be never exists really. Because when we're born, just first born, we don't know much, and we don't have name even. And we don't even have the eye. Because if you boil down to the eye that exists from the baby, what is it that you call the eye, or the her, or the she, or the he? What is it? Can You are. He identified that baby with any entity that we call the I, or the he or the she. Now, when we grow up, then we have a lot of knowledge from teachers, from relatives, from friends, then we begin to have an entity, to have an individual. Yes, an individual that is described as angry person, irritated character, or loving person, or wise person, etc., etc. But where do these wise, loving, angry, or lustful, or greedy person come from? He wasn't born with it. It wasn't the he who was born in the beginning. It was the informations only that we collect. Then we identify ourselves with it. Therefore, the theory of reincarnation actually should not be taught to people, because we don't have an entity to reincarnate. Thank you. I'm glad I made myself clear. Or because you are very enlightened. What reincarnate, perhaps, is this clinging tendency to the information that we got, whether bad or good. And then that clinging tendency will go and find one instrument after another to satisfy the longing that we have not got from the last previous so-called birth. So after the knowledge, the wisdom, or the God self that resides in this body, pass out, leave this temple, he or she, or it will pass to another temple. Just like we go from one church to another, we be the same person. And actually, in the universe, there's not one entity exist, but the whole mass of energy and a loving field, but sometimes divided into different sections, just like the electric currents. It is in the bulbs, and is in the wire, it goes through the microphone, different shape, you see, and go into the refrigerator, different shape again, and go into the electric fan, different shape again. But the inside currents, it is exactly the same. Similarly, we have never been separated from the Most High, the highest power. We have been always the Supreme. But because of our tendency to identify with the information that we get, and the habits that we collect from the environment and from the circumstances, we have an individual, an entity, which thinks itself separate from the whole. So after we are enlightened, through our own effort, I repeat again, through our own effort, or through a spiritual friend, we will see things differently. Then even though we still have an individual shell, but we know we are not that. At that time, our answers will naturally appear, or we don't even have any more question. That's the best way. Because no question is good question. Because when we are enlightened, we rise above this mess of opposition of bad and good, of the discriminational nature of our mind. And then we will see, there was just my shell, my clothing. I am here, me. It's different. The more we identify ourselves with the material knowledge and possession, the less we know how great we are. And some of the people, when they have a lot of knowledge intellectually, find it harder to meditate, harder to attain the higher wisdom than the, less educated person, because they have less to wash, less to disentangle, is that right? Yes. Just like our house, when there are too many stuff inside, it takes longer time to clean out in order to bring in the new furniture. If we have only a few, then it is quicker. So it is very easy to believe that we can get liberation in one lifetime, because actually we are already liberated. We have always been liberated, and we will always be liberated. What makes us feel bound and unfree is the tendency of clutching to this mass of knowledge or habit that we call I, and forget to look to the real thing. I think many of you understand. Actually, the brilliant, more high-level person don't need a lot of lecture or explanation. Just one word, one sentence, enough. And that is also a kind of sudden enlightenment. Last week we had interview with Mrs. Judith Congrat. Yes? And some of the listeners happened to be at our party last night. And she said, as we talked and I answered Mrs. Congrat, she understood clearly that we have been always enlightened. We are always enlightened. Just a little bit obscurity, and that's what it is. It is not easy to bring home these abstract ideas with simple and ordinary words. But when we understood that, is deep inside us, and it becomes part of ourselves. And then we feel very easy and elated. But that is one of the intellectual enlightenment only. In the Zen meditation, sometimes they call it sudden enlightenment or immediate enlightenment, because one word of the teacher set you free in some part, or maybe set you free a great deal or completely. But then again, why we have to meditate after enlightenment or after we already understood what the master or the teacher wanted to say? It is because we have too much habits, too much knowledge in the past, that one time is not enough to convince us that we are enlightened. We probably will forget it tomorrow or next day. So we should repeat this experience of enlightenment again and again until our mind also accepts it. Because it's not enough that the soul, that the real self, recognizes the self. Because the self has always known the self anyhow. Our great self already knows himself. But because we are in this world, we have to do everything with the instrument that is the mind, the computer. That is a tool that we have to use to work in this world, to bring the blessing and power of love into the chaotic environment in order to make a better world for our children and many generations to come. The mind is a very powerful instrument, and that's what hinder us life after life, that we cannot know God, that we cannot know our real position in the universe. Therefore, we cannot overlook him We must befriend him. We must let him know why we do this and why we do this, do that, until the mind completely accepts and become our good friend. Then we can be very happy and relaxed. Otherwise, if the mind doesn't agree, then we can forget about meditation. It doesn't yield any fruit. And you sit in meditation, he keep asking you questions. Why you sit? What for? What for? I want to go to movies. I want to see a girlfriend. Yeah. Why you sitting there like an idiot? Yes. Coffee is better and cakes is nicer. All this kind of thing. Therefore, the spiritual teachers, apart from transmitting the silence knowledge of the real enlightenment, still has to give some oral teaching to the people in order to satisfy the inquisitive nature of the mind, which always asks questions, which always weighing things because of the information he received before is contradict to the information he received now. Or even he doesn't understand it, he says it's not the same. That's the reason why many of us cannot understand that one religion is not different from the next. It is because of the mind. After enlightenment, we see beyond the mind, we go beyond the mind, then we see differently, and we truly understand that there is no different, never. It's so simple, the thing, that after enlightenment, we will shake our head and cannot believe that we could not understand before. As easy as we see each other now, but we couldn't see without enlightenment. That is a very, very complicated situation which is made by the king of illusion to keep people in darkness. After enlightenment, you'll be very, very surprised many a times to discover that so simple a thing, so easy to understand, and we had never be able to understand. The teaching of the teachers, or master, or spiritual friend, are called oral teaching, theoretical part of the spiritual practice. But the more important part is the part that is transmitted in silence 24 hours after the teacher has accepted a person as his, you know, new younger friend, new student. Well, I hesitate to use a big word like master, disciples. But all the books are full of these terminologies. And we get used to it after sometimes. And people keep talking to you, you're disciples and you are master and so on. And they just brainwash you. Brainwash me also into these things. I'm always having a hard time to call somebody disciples, because I see that everyone has the same essence that I have, no more, no less. And we are always connected with each other and are always connected with God. It is a shame that we have to go to someone to ask questions or to be a disciple. But let's be humble for some time. Wow. And then we will be great. If we have not found our great selves, it is also difficult for us to admit that we are great. And then after we have found our great selves, it is also difficult to admit that we are great. Before we know our great self, it's difficult to admit that we are great. And after we know our great self, it's even more difficult to admit that we are great. Because, simply, we see everybody is great. You know what I mean? Thank you. You're very attentive. And I'm very happy to see that. So the theoretical teaching of any master, whether past, present, or future, is only a small part of the whole thing. If we only learn the theory, yes, we can get enlightened somewhat. Or maybe at least we become an ethical person, like we will understand the need of keeping the precepts of not using violence instead of spreading love, not stealing instead of sharing with neighbors, etc., etc. But now, after any master pass away, the theoretical teaching will be unavoidably left behind by the recording of disciples or of other people who attended their sermon. And the later generation will lean on that, this recorded information, in order to practice, perhaps, or to have a guideline into what to do to find God. Because of their thirst for knowledge, they will grasp anything at all in order to understand God. And then from that, religion begin to form. That's why before Christ, we don't have Christianity. Before Buddha, we don't have Buddhist. The Buddhist came from the Buddha, yeah. Bodhi. Bodhi in Sanskrit means enlightenment. So an enlightened person is called Buddha, yes. And Christ is a name in Hebrew for enlightened. So the person who enlightened is crowned as Christ. So after Christ has gone back to the Father, we form the religion called Christianity. After Buddha has gone, Christianity from Christ, you see. In German they call it Christ. So Christianity is easier to understand, to relate it to. And Buddha came from Bodhi, and so the people who follow the Buddha, follow Buddha teaching of Buddhist. And after the Lao Tzu, who taught the Tao, has gone away, they formed the Taoism and the concept of Taoist. So now we have at least three religions already, and we are in trouble. It's okay if each one can pursue what he wants to study and believe, whether false or truth. But the problem is, when we start to argue, start to fight among each other because of philosophical differences, then we truly disgrace ourselves and our ascended teachers, because they always preach peace, integrity, and love. So it doesn't matter now whether we believe Christianity is the greatest religion or Buddhist is the highest belief in our world. We do not need to argue, but we should seek to know our true religion, the true religious essence which Buddha left behind, which the Tao teachers left behind, or which Christ left behind. And we know only one. The quickest way is enlightenment. And many people can get enlightenment also by themselves to some degree through the teaching of any teacher or through their own effort or their own sincerity and longing. But many people cannot. And even if we can get enlightenment ourselves, there are many things that still need to be cleared by a living friend, a living teacher, who has gone all the way and back and forth. Because the spiritual road is invisible, but still it is like any road. we can master it. We can walk and complete it. But this is a mundane way of speaking only, because the universal wisdom is so vast that we can never in one moment or in one lifetime make use of all of this, all of the wisdom of the universe. Therefore, even if we say we have completed the journey, but we don't use all of our wisdom at once, except when we need it. Many people come to me and ask me if I know the future of the world, or if I know her future or his future and all that. I say, I don't. I don't look into the future. I only look into the present and know what I have to do in this moment. That's enough for me. But sometimes, if necessary, I can glimpse into the future, if only necessary, and into the past even, if we want to know, only if necessary, truly necessary and beneficial to someone or to the world, then God let me know. And that's enough. Otherwise, we burden ourselves with wisdom, with too much knowledge of what's going on. So, have no illusion about enlightenment, but see it as it is, that our true nature, that we always have it, and now if we want to know it, there's a way to know, because it's always there. So, that's why when people come to me with questions, I always answer them. Because I know, even though if they are enlightened, they still need to know something. But only after I have explained a great deal and they still want to ask more and don't want to understand and try to just hang around, maybe because they like my dress, then I send him out. I say, go home, meditate, and then you know. And it is truly so. Truly so. Because if we truly sincere in meditation, every answers will come when we need it. Don't need to write a letter to a master, because we are always connected, and we are more connected so after initiation. We will be connected forever until you become a master. Well, I'm speaking too much sometimes, but the truth always come out, and I cannot sometimes stop it. I forgot. It is because God spoke through my mouth. And then when I forget to stop him, he keep go on and on all the time about all the secret. And then sometimes people think that I boast. But it's all the truth. If you come to a doctor, he should tell you that he is able to cure your sickness. Otherwise, what good to come to him? Yeah? If you come to a friend for enlightenment, he should tell you his ability, that he's capable to help you to make you recognize your enlightened self. Any of us can become the light bearer sooner or later, because we already are the light. It's just we are too busy with all these informations and all the work that we have to do, all the financial problem that we have to face, and then we forgot how great we are. Yes. We forgot to use our great wisdom to tackle all this small problem. We just try to fix the problem itself. We fix ourselves and we be engulfed in it, we swallow in it. Therefore it's difficult to solve the problem. But if we look backward and know where we stand, and instead of putting all attention to the problem, we step back and remember, we are not the problem. And then we can see it clearer. That's why we need meditation. We have to go back inward to remember who is the owner, who is the boss, and what to do. Thank you.
How does one totally surrender and let go and let God? I assume they mean let God do it instead of one.
Right. With enlightenment, it's easier. It's easier. Otherwise, we only want to do it, but the mind obstructs us and always feel that he is the one who does it. And we are attached to the mind, so we think we are the one who do it. So enlightenment will clear everything, quicker or slowlier.
Sometimes when I meditate, I dwell on suicide.
Try to meditate more to get out of that. You see, it doesn't matter what type of meditation you are doing. Sometimes we go through, you know, but you have to state clearly what type of meditation you do. Then I can be more specific. Otherwise, we all mix up. Any kind is meditation. Even the chant mantra, om 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 om, they also say meditation, or reciting Buddha's name, anything they call meditation. It might not be incorrect, yes, in a way, but still it confuses people, you know? So you please specify your type of meditation or prayer so that I can answer you more clearly. Now, if you meditate ordinary method or any method, okay, that has a little power, or if the teacher has a little power even then, we still go through the fast of karmic influence. That's why sometimes the meditating people feel depressed. Also sometimes because of the influence of the environment or the relatives and friends who you live with, because you're sympathetic with that person. So you pick up the thinking and the mood of that person. So be careful, it might not be you. Because there is a book of a person from Theosophy Society, from Madame Blavatsky, yeah? Okay, one of the person from that society is very enlightened. He wrote about his experience in meditation in the first stage of his practice, that he sat in his office at lunch break and tried to meditate in his way, his meditative methods, theosophical method. And then he began to feel something like homesick, and then he see a house with people in it and that he has never seen before, and so on, so on, so on. And later he discovered that the homesick feeling is from his colleague working with him. And then the house that he had seen in meditation actually was his house. Yes. And the father was that person's father. The people he see in the house were that person's relatives, etc., etc. So you beware of the openness of our energy when we meditate. And mostly, if we have a living teacher whose energy is still alive, then he or she can protect you from this influence. But if we try to learn from a past master whose magnetic field already has drawn up to the higher dimension, then we might have a little difficulty with asking for protection. Yes. So we tend to pick up more easily the environmental influence, whether bad or good. Yes. So we can never be sure whether that meditation or practice experience is ours or it is the neighbor's.
Is the Kuan Yin method similar to Radha Swami's method?
I think somehow, yes. Some degree it is similar.
Master, if I do not become enlightened and my wife does, will I have difficulty?
Yes. You have a problem. You're unenlightened. It's the biggest problem. And it will be losing face if your wife become wiser and wiser. And it's difficult to control her, so watch it.
Jesus says, surely I'm with you always to the very end of the world.
Sure.
He also says, no servant can serve two masters. Mm-hmm. What are your views on these six scriptures.
Okay. Any master, when he's alive, say the same thing. A living master has a duty to take any sincere seeker back to the end of the kingdom of God. And his duty only finished there and then. So when Jesus said that, he gave the disciples a solid promise that he will never forsake them nor leave them. And every master should promise like that. I feel very embarrassed and shy to proclaim anything that is difficult to prove to you intellectually, except through initiation and your later continuous meditation. But if you want to seek this long-term promise in the name of God, I also give you.
How does the Kuan Yin differ from Zen or other Eastern meditations? Is it important to have a local master?
Local master?
Yeah, a local one. One here.
You can have any master if you feel affinity with that master. And if that master is strong enough to take you to the end of the world, then you can study with him. Ask him if he promises you liberation. Ask him if he guides you beyond this world anytime, 24 hours, before and after your death. Can he be with you always? If he promises, then take him.
Thank you for your company on today's episode of Words of Wisdom. Please tune in tomorrow for part 3 of this fascinating lecture on Have No Illusion About Enlightenment. And now please stay tuned for a journey through aesthetic realms only on Supreme Master Television. May your soul grow brightly and serenely in heaven's light.